Please help me give a warm welcome to our speaker tonight, Dawn from the Chesapeake BYOC Home Group.
All right, I'm super nervous, even though I may have done this a time or two, but my name's Dawn. I am an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 30th, 2018. I do have a home group, which is Chesapeake BYOC on Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on Battlefield Boulevard at St. Stephen's Martyr Church. So come and join us. I do have sponsees. I do have a sponsor, and she knows that I'm her sponsor, or knows that she's my sponsor. And I also have a service position as well. So I guess I'll go ahead and, you know, share our experience, strength, and hope. More so the experience and the hope. I was just saying earlier, I don't like to stay in the drunk. The first time I spoke, I think I cried and talked about how drunk I was the entire time. But so I grew up in the Hampton Roads area in Chesapeake. I grew up with a very dysfunctional home. My father was an alcoholic. I don't know that I say he still is because he doesn't drink anymore, but he was definitely an alcoholic as I was growing up. I lived in a very abusive family. You know, my dad was very abusive towards my brother and I, towards my mother. And he left us, you know, when I was about 13. So at the age of 13, I basically started raising my 8-year-old little brother. And then at that time, I had no parental supervision. And with no parental supervision, that's kind of when things kind of took off for me. I remember my mom, she was from the Eastern Shore, and she would have these jars underneath the sink of moonshine. And I'll never forget that first time that I had that sip of moonshine and how I felt and how it burnt like hell. But the feeling I felt afterward was indescribable. So it was kind of off to the races really after that. In hindsight, I see so many aspects of I was an alcoholic from the very beginning. I went to a concert when I was 16, and I'm the type of drinker, I'm not there to drink socially. I drink to get effed up, you know. So my first concert, my mom purchased me a bottle of Southern Comfort. I still can't even think of that smell, but I drank the entire bottle and threw up during the whole concert of Phil Collins, and it was terrible. But you know, and they talk about the progression of the disease, and that progression, you know, for me was I drank really hard, basically through my 20s. I did a lot of terrible things. I was always a hard worker, though, you know. No matter where I was, I worked hard, people liked me, and I got to the top really quickly. And with that said, you know, I finally settled down and, you know, met someone. And I'll back up just a little bit. I do have some issues with men, right? Some trust issues, right? So at the age of 13, I got pregnant. Unfortunately, I did have an abortion. And I probably had 5 or 6 other pregnancies by the time I was 21. And then with that being said, by the age of 25, I was pregnant. I called my parents on the phone from the hospital after I had given birth and told them they were grandparents. And they were like, what in the ham sandwich? So not only did I do that, but I also failed to mention that he was a black child too. So that went over really well, especially with my father. So with that being said, you know, I did drink and drug my entire pregnancy. I'm not proud of it, but it's just part of my story. And then a couple of years later, I did get married, and to a guy I can see in hindsight, we ended up having 3 other children together. So I took more hostages. You know, they talk about the drinking, and, you know, we were functioning alcoholics until I wasn't, you know. So, you know, the wine every single night, it was he would have his beers, I would have my wine. I still got up, went to work, you know, all of the things, right? Check those boxes. Drank heavily on the weekends. And then I decided to, you know, throw a little monkey wrench into things, and I decided I'm going to have an affair, and broke probably the love of my life's heart. So I did do that. He found out. That did not go over so well. So at that point, we decided to obviously part ways, and then I decided I would go ahead and be with the person that I'd had an affair with while I was pregnant with my very last child, who was soon to be 16. So nothing I do or did was normal. I was so out of control, looking at it now. But anyway, so I had my daughter. I was now a single mom of four kids. My youngest daughter, all she ever knew was her parents being divorced, you know. So I was with him, and my drinking, he didn't quite know how bad my drinking was, because I wouldn't allow him to stay over at the house when my kids were home. So when they went with their dad, he would come over. So he always thought I was just partying during that week when I didn't have the kids. And then we moved in together, and that was a big holy shit. Now I'm like, what am I going to do? So the lies I told, you know, it was a bad day, it was a this, you know, because he was like, God, you drink every day. And I'm like, well, I'm only having one or two. Well, then once I recognized that he was really on to my drinking, that's when the hiding began. And I thought I was really good at it, until one day he went up into the closet and he supposedly hit a box, and about 96 plastic bottles of Smirnoff come falling out. And he was like, what is it? I'm like, oh my gosh, it was from when I cleaned out the house, when I moved. I mean, the lies, I was quick on my feet. He also found a plate full of cocaine in my son's closet that I lied and said it was my brother's wife's, I don't even know, but had my ID, my credit card, and a dollar bill rolled up, and somehow he still believed that it wasn't mine. So anyway, he obviously knew I had a problem, so he was like, you know, why don't we just drink on the weekends? And it talks about that in the big book, you know, let's try something different. So now my wine had really gone to vodka, because in my mind, you couldn't smell it. People couldn't smell it. Well, if you drink enough of it, they can smell it. So I woke up one morning and my stomach was probably out to here, and I couldn't button my pants. And I'm like, what in the world? So I went to the doctor, and she proceeded to tell me I needed to go straight to the emergency room, that I had ascites, and that my liver was starting to fail. And so you go in, it was the weirdest procedure I've ever had done in my entire life. You know, they're first looking at you like, I mean, are you stupid? Like, anyway, so they take like this beer growler and they take this long needle and they drain all this fluid out. And she was like, I'm pretty sure that you're probably going to have to do this numerous times, you know? And she was like, you cannot drink again. And I was like, okay. And I remember being in the hospital, and my fiance at that time, he was like, you do realize you have a drinking problem. And I was laughing as I was telling people that I'm an alcoholic. And the only reason I was saying that out loud is because that's what I thought I was supposed to say. You know, I was already thinking and planning about what I was going to drink or what I was going to do without alcohol when I got out. So I was in there for about 5 days. I lasted one whole day with no alcohol. Went to the ABC store at 10 in the morning, and I thought, all right, well, instead of Rumplemintz and vodka, I'm going to go to Rumplemintz and Goldschlager. And I bet you that will solve, and I won't get big in the stomach. So every morning as I'm drinking, I'm looking, I'm like, it's fine, I'm fine, you know? And then it got to the point where I was throwing up, and I was throwing up blood. I had clumps of hair coming out. So I would have to throw up in the morning, try to down some alcohol, throw up again to down more alcohol. And I had been at a job for 17 years, And my friend today, but he was my boss at the time, said, hey, listen, it was 11 o'clock in the morning. He said, somebody said they smelled alcohol. Would you be willing to go get a breathalyzer? And I'm like, in my mind, I'm like, sure, you know. I'm thinking, I mean, I've only had a half a bottle, you know. So I go to patient first, and I blow a .275 at like 11:30 in the morning, and I felt completely fine. Like, what's the problem? And I'll never forget when I had to pee in a cup because they gave me a drug test. She looked at me and said, you are so dehydrated, like you're going to die. Like your urine is orange, you know. This was February the 17th, and I continued to keep on drinking until one day, and you know, my kids are at home, they're seeing this, I'm passing out. I mean, everybody, it's clear to every, my eyes are yellow. My employees are like, Dawn, what, your eyes look like highlighters. And I'm like, oh, it's just a medication that I'm on, you know. So the 29th of September, I was going to do payroll the next day. My son came in and he said, you have two choices. You can get in the car right now, or I'm going to call 911. You're dying. And I cannot sit here and watch it. And I was like, listen, I have payroll tomorrow. As soon as I finish payroll, I will go to the doctor. And he goes, pack your booze, pack whatever the hell you want, but you're going right now. So I ended up going to Chesapeake Regional. I downed my last bottle of vodka in the ER bathroom. And I don't really remember anything after that. I woke up in the ICU about 5 days later. Apparently I was in a medically induced coma because my liver, my kidneys, everything was failing, and I probably wasn't going to make it through the night. So, you know, after that stint, I think I was in there about 7 days. I ended up having to go back to Virginia Beach for blood transfusions. Like, I had all of the things. I'm very lucky to be here alive today. I truly am a miracle. But after I got out, I didn't know what to do. And I was terrified. I did not know how to not drink. And how was I going to have fun? And, you know, all the friends I knew, that's all we did together. So I had my son take me to my very first AA meeting. And I was terrified. I just remember walking into the church, and it was pouring down rain. I was crying, and these two women in the lobby came to me, and they were like, honey, are you here for AA? And I was like, yes. So that's kind of how my journey began, and what a journey it has been. By the grace of God, I am so grateful for this program and what it has done for me. I didn't realize that you could go to more than one meeting a week for like the first 4 months. So I was hanging on by a thread for every Thursday. And to be honest with you, I was really incoherent. You know, they talk about this brain fog. And I certainly had that brain fog for probably the first year. I was just talking about the first time I spoke. I don't even really remember. I think I cried the entire time and I was drunk in my speaking the whole time. But anyway, I kept going, and you know, I would hear these people, and I didn't really know what they were saying in these readings, and none of it made sense to me. I just couldn't, but I knew that if I felt safe for that hour. And then once I realized that I could go to more than one meeting, that's really when my life became so much. I mean, I had a sponsor. I was like, I didn't even know what a sponsor meant. You know, I just thought it was a person that you say, hey, you're my sponsor, and that's it. That's all you need to do. I didn't realize I was supposed to call, meet, you know, work steps, you know, what, I didn't understand any of that. Until I did. And, you know, she, as my first sponsor, she sat me down, and, you know, we met once a week, and I listened. I listened a whole lot because my comprehension level was just, it just wasn't where it needed to be. And, you know, slowly, they talk about slowly, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. For me, it was very slow at first. And some days I would have to put myself to bed at 5 p.m. just so I could get through the next day and not drink that day. And fortunately, today I can honestly say I don't have a desire to drink. that the obsession was truly lifted. And you know, what is really important for me is my spiritual, you know, my spiritual malady, and you know, when I'm off the beam. And today I know what that difference is. I know when I'm not doing the right things. And as my sponsor says, you know, when you work 4 through 7, sometimes you have to sit in the hallway and act as if God has removed it. And sometimes I like to go and kick the door down. And those are the consequences of my own actions. But some of the gratitude that I have been able to go through is the fellowship that I have around me. I have so many women that I call friends. You know, I think it's just something I've never truly experienced before, the friendships that I've formed. In 2020, my mom, who I was estranged from for quite a few years, I kind of was working on being willing to be willing to form a relationship with her. And then God did for me what I couldn't do for myself. And she called me one day and told me she had stage 4 lung cancer and she was dying. And I immediately went to the hospital and got to spend 91 days, the most incredible 91 days of my life with her. And I got that relationship back, and she got that relationship back. It was kind of like we had the past 40 years in those 91 days, and that was a gift, a true gift from God. And she got to see me sober, you know, and it was just a miracle. And then, you know, a couple of years later, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. My daughter was in the Marines, so she was at boot camp, and I didn't want her to find out. But I had to have a double mastectomy, like radiation surgeries, you know, stent of chemotherapy. But I will tell you, I got through that one day at a time. And I got through that by calling my sponsor, crying to my sponsor, calling. And these women that just surrounded me, that fed me, that stopped by just to say I love you, that dropped off gifts at my door. I mean, in my entire life, that never happened. So all of those things came true, and only because of this program and the choice that I have to make every day to give away what has been so freely given to me. And I just, you know, I just can't be more thankful than that. You know, I found out a couple weeks ago I'm going to be a grandmother for the first time. My daughter and her husband got eloped in September. I got a phone call, her dad and I, that they got eloped and they were married. And they're both in the Marines in Georgia. And then on Valentine's Day, we both got the call that we're going to be grandparents, and they're due in September. So, and I get to be sober and to be present. I do have a 16-year-old. She's heavily involved in volleyball. I get to show up every time and be part of that, even though sometimes I'm cursing and kicking and screaming because it's 6 volleyball practices, and you know, but I get to do those things today. I give a living amends to my other two, my boys. They still live with me. One's finishing medical school, the other is, you know, finishing his master's. But I get to make amends, a living amends, to all of my children every day. I have a real problem wanting relationships. I have old ideas, as my sponsor likes to say. I have old ideas of what relationships should look like with my children, that, you know, when they come into town, I need to be, it's like I'm a helicopter, like, what do you need? Where do you, you know, what do you want to eat? You know, and I can't just sit still and just be present because I try to overcompensate. And only because I have this program and I'm reminded that I need to just let things be. And when I let God do things instead of myself, things work out so much better. They really do. And I have to remind myself, I still have to leave sticky notes, or I have to tell on myself, you know, like I did it again at Christmas time. My daughter came home from Georgia, and as soon as they're walking the door, I am like on top of them, you know. But today, at least, I can recognize it, and I can laugh about it. You know, Rule 62, right? Don't take yourself so seriously. And I know I haven't really taken a whole lot of time, but I'm just so grateful to be sober. Thank you for having me, and that's all I have.
Thank you, Dawn.